Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Give him that treat, Ed. There you go.
The treat was voted down. It didn't get a majority. Poor treat.
Do you want to try?
Well, I don't think it went very well the first time. This is like Theresa May and her withdrawal agreement. Let's try again. How many are we going to try?
This week, I went for a walk with former Labour leader and MP for Doncaster North, Ed Miliband. I'd met Ed recently when I guested on the podcast he does with Jeff Lloyd. And Ed's two sons were very taken with my dog, Raymond. So I thought I'd take Ed out on a walk with him to sell him the joys of dog ownership. We met in North London's Parliament Hill, which is near to where we both live. And it was a lovely morning. We talked about his childhood, growing up in an academic family, and the legacy of that. We chatted about losing the election and what effect that had on him personally. And he also told me about his reaction to being mistaken for Nick Clegg on the Tube. Spoiler alert, there's swearing involved. I really warmed to Ed. He's very laid back and bright and funny and just generous company. But mainly I liked him because he seemed genuinely into Raymond. So he's got to be a nice guy. I really recommend his podcast, by the way, with Jeff Lloyd, which is called Reasons to be Cheerful. And it's a brilliant listen. It's fascinating and really funny. You'll be hooked, I promise. Remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes if you like this episode. I'll hand over to the man himself now. Here's Ed.
To take Ray.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, we can let him off the lead.
Raymond is my therapy dog for the morning.
We can let him off the lead if you like.
Hello, sweetie.
Do you know that
he's not exactly going running off into the sunset, is he?
As you don't have a dog, Ed, yeah. Can I say I'm really impressed by how you cope with that lead?
My lead management skills.
Some people fear the lead and the harness, because Raymond has a harness. Come on, Raymond.
What breed is he?
So, Raymond is a Shih Tzu.
Yeah.
We should say, this isn't your first meeting with Raymond.
It is not my first meeting, because you came and did our podcast live at the South Bank.
Yeah.
And you brought Raymond, and everybody loves Raymond.
Shall I formally introduce you, Ed?
Go on.
I'm sure you can gather by now, because he has a very distinctive voice. I'm with the very
Saying I'm adenoidal, is that what you're saying?
Okay, we need to talk to your therapist about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with the very marvellous Ed Miliband, and we're in a park local to him and me.
Yes.
In North London. Yeah, in Parliament Hill. And you see, often I avoid saying the exact area, but then I suspect to someone in politics, you have to be quite transparent about where you live and your manner.
Yeah, I think people know this is my area.
Look at this little dog, Ed. What do you think of him? Hello, sweetheart.
Oh, he's a pretty nice dog.
Hello.
Hi.
What kind of dog is that?
It's a Cabochon, Cavalier and Bichon.
Do you know what that is? Yeah. No. Oh, Ed.
Look at Raymond.
I'm trying to teach him about dogs.
There are millions of crosses out there, you know, one of the crosses.
What do you think of Emily's dog?
Raymond.
What, this one?
Yeah. Oh, you paused too long. You paused too long.
I don't know, what is it?
Well, I didn't know what yours was.
Oh, I see.
He's a Shih Tzu.
Oh, he's a Shih Tzu, yeah. He's a Shih Tzu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a bit of bottom smelling going on.
Oh yes, that's a big feature. Bye bye, come on, Ray.
I wonder why they smell each other's bottoms.
Well, look, Ed.
Aww.
Can you imagine that running towards you? This podcast, I've asked you on my podcast today, partly because I really liked you and I thought you were brilliant fun and just really interesting when I met you, but also because I met your sons, Dan,
yes,
and Sam, who were possibly the most charming children I've ever met in my entire life. They were just lovely.
That's exactly the right thing to say to a parent.
No, they were. They were really...
Oh, Raymond, I nearly stepped on you, sorry.
So you don't have a dog, you and your wife, Justine?
I've never had a dog.
Really?
Nope.
And why is that?
I don't know. I don't think my parents ever sort of thought about getting a pet, really. And I'm not sure. My aunt had a dog, my father's sister, called Wesley.
Yeah. Hello.
Were you being quite protective of Raymond?
I was a little bit frightened there.
What, you thought the dog might eat Raymond?
Yes, I did. I think I'm a bit overprotective, and you've got to get the balance right, because I always say I don't want to mess him up, like, so he turns into Anthony Perkins and Psycho.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, I am protective over him. Because he's
so
small.
Has he ever had been attacked by a dog?
He hasn't been attacked by a dog, but then I think that's because this is why I can't have children, because I think I'd never allow them to do anything. Come on, Ray.
I love the way he runs.
He's found a new family now. So
I mean, it's like watching a sort of...
Raymond!
It's like watching a rather large toupee sort of running through Hampstead Heath with sort of legs, a toupee on legs. I mean that in the nicest way.
I mean, none taken, Ed. Obviously. Obviously, masses taken.
I mean,
taken.
He could be a toupee, couldn't he?
Ed Miliband, will you stop calling my dog a toupee? And other things I never thought I'd say.
He's so sweet.
So you were saying you didn't have animals growing up, and your family, was your dad Ralph?
Yes.
Such a brilliant name. My favourite name.
Not his original name. His original name was Adolf. A rather unfortunate name during the Second World War.
Yes.
His mother, but he was said...
Ray, come here. Ray! He's not allowed to go in the water, Ed.
No, I think he might submerge in the water.
There'll just be a floating toupee.
A floating toupee. Is that rude, the floating toupee, the toupee? I honestly mean it in a very sort of complimentary sense.
Someone would say, has anyone lost their rug here?
Yeah. Well, I suppose rug, actually, yeah, that's the other way of thinking about it.
So go on, you were saying, so your
dad's... Yeah, so he was named Adolf. But I don't know what possessed he always used to say, I don't know what possessed my mother to think Adolf was a good name, and it was her name. Anyway, then he arrived in Britain at the age of 16.
But presumably he was born before...
1924.
Someone else took it, right.
Yeah,
okay,
so Hitler wasn't yet.
That's a bit of a sickener, isn't it, if you'd chosen that
I
name.
Know. So he arrived in Britain at the age of 16 because he fled here with his... father. They took one of the last boats out of Belgium.
Right.
The boat came to Britain. I mean, they kind of, you know, without any sense really of what they were going to do. And then they had a landlady, and the landlady said, "We can't have you called Adolf. You're going to have to be called Ralph from now on." And that was how he became. And he said, "Oh, okay." Well, presumably not very good English. And that's how he became Ralph.
Really?
Yeah. And so his parents always used to call him Dolph.
So God, do you know, I've only just realised Dolph Lundgren.
Yes.
In the Rocky actor. I know you're not great on popular culture.
Yeah, I'm not.
But that occurs to me that he must have been called Adolf, do you think?
Yes, well, I don't know. That's interesting.
Because Dolph isn't really a name, so we found out his secret.
Yeah, that is true. So there you go.
And your mum was called...
My mum is called
Marion.
And she came.
She was
refugee. She's a refugee from Poland. You know, lost her father in a concentration camp, I'm afraid. We only just really found out where he died, actually, through sort of research.
Yeah.
And she's called Marion.
Yeah.
She also had a kind of assumed name of some kind during the Second World War.
What do you call him, Ed? Because he's going too far ahead now.
Raymond! Raymond!
That's good.
Raymond. Raymond!
That was very sweet. It was like you were a schoolboy and your voice was breaking. And
Raymond!
Ray! Hello! Hello, this is a nice dog.
This is a very sweet dog.
Do you like this dog, Ed?
Yeah, I love him.
Oh,
What's his name?
Luna.
Luna.
Oh,
what kind of dog is Luna?
She's a bit of a mix up.
Oh, she's beautiful.
A bit cockapoo, a bit collie, a bit terrier, a bit all sorts.
How long have you had Luna?
A couple of years.
Where did you get?
She's from a charity called Wild at Heart. You know the flower shop?
Yes,
she's
I do.
A charity that rescues dogs from Europe.
So Nikki Tibbles, yeah.
Do you want to throw away? I mean, I know.
Yeah, we are going to throw away.
I know you're attached to Raymond's poo, but I mean, I think you know, I think you've been holding it long enough, Emily. I think the time to dispose of the poo has arrived.
I have smelt it a bit as well during our encounter. Well, but I haven't seen the bin.
Presumably, it's maturing.
There we go. So yeah, so your background, Ed.
Yeah.
For some reason, I get the sense of it being slightly similar to mine, and. Mine was, I suppose, North London, slightly bohemian, artsy chaos, really. But I don't know whether yours was
mine
chaos.
Mine wasn't really chaos.
What was yours like?
Serious, I think is the one word description. I mean, it wasn't sort of Marks for breakfast.
That's Carl, by the way.
That's Carl, not Groucho.
Yeah.
But it was definitely quite serious. I think because my parents were children of the Holocaust in some ways,
yes,
it sort of made them, well, you know, life was, so obviously life was to be lived, but it was to sort of, you know, you needed to sort of make a difference while you were around and if you had the child. I mean, yeah, I just think they must have thought to themselves, so many of their relatives died, you know, and all that. And I think it must leave a real mark.
Yes.
And a sort of sense of, you know, that you were lucky to survive, and yeah, so it was quite a serious sort of work ethic and so on.
And did you have, it was you and your brother David, obviously, and we used to have a lot of these sort of dinner parties with people around the table who'd be like, Michael Foote would come to
us. Is that right?
Like, yeah, so we'd
God, have, it's very similar then.
Yeah, and we'd have sort of academics and...
Wow.
But we were very encouraged, me and my sister, to be... I guess mini adults.
Exactly the same. I think that isn't that. It's very rare to meet people like that. It's exactly the same.
There was no concession for us being children. We were spoken to like adults. Did you have that?
Yes,
then?
And in a way, I thought at the time it was very good, and I still think it had a lot of good points to it. But I suspect it probably, I don't know. I think it probably gave me a sense. Early on of, I don't quite know how to put this, but it's sort of a sense of responsibility. That sounds quite good, a sense of, you know.
Well, I know what you mean. I guess my take on it, I always felt a bit, I think you have to, it's not even sort of growing up fast, but I, just to give you an example of the sort of thing my dad would say, I said something to him once, I went to hug him and he was, head was buried in The Origin of Consciousness in the bicameral mind, which is his like reading. That's what my dad would do. But I can remember him, I said, oh, you're so ungesturing. And I remember my father said, the word you're searching for is undemonstrative.
Wow.
But to me,
how old were you then?
I must have been about sort of six, I guess.
What, you said ungesturing at the age of six?
Yeah. But I was searching for the right, I mean, it was wrong.
Ungesturing is pretty good.
But that was interesting. He was, and he wasn't like a Victorian dad when he said it. He was almost being quite humorous about it.
But was he undemonstrative?
I always describe, he tried so hard, but he was from a generation sort of raised by nannies a bit. And I think...
Mine were more demonstrative, actually.
Were they?
Yeah. And you know, my dad was quite funny and... God, it's a real dog heaven about to arrive. So many of them. I think it's this responsibility thing. I think it gave me a. I sort of didn't have any kind of wild teenage years or anything. You know what I mean?
Did you not?
No, really, no.
I don't want him joining that gang, Ed. I think
it looks like you might get him with the wrong crowd.
I think they're like the T-Birds. I don't want him to be with the T-Birds.
Well, he's looking like he's sort of thinking, what's going on here?
No, Raymond. These are nice friends for him, Ed. Look.
Yeah, I think it's good to walk by on the other side sometimes, Raymond.
Hello. You see, that's too barky for me, Ed.
Yeah, slightly too boisterous.
I couldn't cope with that. That's the Boris Johnson of dogs.
Yeah, it is.
It's all noise and no substance.
Yeah, it is all slightly too...
It's the look at me dog.
Yeah, well, so I think Raymond's been quite sensible, actually.
Oh, he's charming.
Yeah.
He's been raised.
High sense of responsibility.
Well, I think what it is, what we're searching for is, because I had a similar thing where there was a lot of laughter, you know, it was an engaging, it wasn't like some sort of hideous environment where we were, but I sort of feel we were adulted young.
Yes.
That's how I felt.
I think that's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And it's like when I was 11 and I would say, you know, that my father would have some friends around and I would, or my parents would have some friends around and I would sort of make some political remark. People would look at me as if to say, well, and occasionally that someone would say, well, I think you don't really understand because you're 11. Or my father would sort of then massively go into fight to defend me and say, well, don't say that. He's, you know, just because he's 11.
Oh. So this is where you grew up?
Not exactly. No, actually, because my parents lived in Primrose Hill.
Right.
So it's all slightly, so it's more like Primrose Hill, Regent's Park.
So that was expensive, though. How did they do well, not when well they for themselves?
Not when they moved in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so weird. When they moved in the 1965, my mother's mother was quite upset. But she's like, why are you coming to this part of town? Yeah.
Wasn't it funny?
Because it was quite run down in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's sort of not, you know, it's totally different than what it is now. Which way do you want to go?
Well, I'm following you.
Oh, right, okay. We can go up the hill.
Shall we go up that way? Okay. Oh, he likes the hill. Ed's already told me he's not a morning person, which surprised me because I think anyone in politics, I imagine you to be, have a sort of, right, set the alarm at 5, read all the papers on the treadmill.
I just have never been. I sort of got more into being a morning person when I was leader, as you sort of have to be.
Mm.
And I sort of think, I don't know whether you find this, but I think if you fight it, if you sort of, once you're up and you're going, then it's okay. It just can be a bit of an effort.
Mm.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's slightly to do with your background, because I think, well, my parents, you know, we would have these discussions late into the night, so my sister and I didn't really have bedtimes as such.
Oh, really? That is interesting. You see, I think it was more that's more bohemian than me.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't have no bedtimes. Wow.
And you learned the violin and you were quite...
Oh, no, not really. I was terrible at the violin.
I imagine.
The Suzuki method. In fact, my memory of that is, I mean, it was real. We lived in America when I was 7 for a year, as my father was teaching there. When I took up the violin with a Suzuki method, Ohio gozai imas. You used to have to sort of begin the lesson by saying that. Some kind of Japanese greeting. That's the only thing I remember about the violin. And then after 4 years of the sort of... I said to my mother... I really want to give this up, honestly. I'm just not enjoying the violin. She said, thank God. Oh, thank God. And it was sort of both of us had been sort of kind of humouring the other one, I think. I'd been sort of humouring her and she'd been humouring me. So we stopped humouring each other and my great violin career was over.
And you went to...
Have a stop. Secondary school.
School kid were you? Were you academic? I mean,
nerdy.
I'm imagining you and David were both straight A students.
Nerdy.
Yeah.
Nerdy and square.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was quite a tough school, actually.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite a tough school.
What do you mean tough?
I think in the first or second year when I arrived, the deputy head teacher there was attacked by kids who'd left the school and came in balaclavas and sort of attacked him. Yeah.
So that was tough. Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite tough.
He's joined another family. Look,
oh,
Eddie's
gone
off with someone else.
Raymond?
Come on, Ray. I hate the way he looks over, Ed, like...
Oh, don't you think that's quite sweet, I thought, the way he looked over?
Well, no, I thought it was kind of like weighing up whether he would stay with me.
Oh, no, I think it was more he was, like, looking to you for approval. So where are you?
Oh, Ed, you've made me feel so much better. What was interesting, that woman, looked over and she said, oh my God, it's him.
Yeah.
It's him. But I liked it because it was like you were sort of Justin Bieber or something.
Yeah, I often get compared to Justin Bieber.
Do you get that reaction a lot?
Well, I get a lot of people recognising me.
Of course.
And they tend to say at the moment things like, what do you do these days? I say, I'm still an MP. Or maybe I shouldn't title my autobiography, What Do You Do These Days?
So I'm still standing, Elton John.
I'm still standing. That's not.
But you could literally.
I will survive. And then sometimes people occasionally mistake me for somebody else. So
who do they seem to?
Justine and I went to see Hamilton on my birthday.
Oh, did you like it?
Christmas Eve. You know, I'm probably the one person in the world that wasn't wild about Hamilton.
Frank Skinner hated it. He said Frank Skinner said he preferred Noggin the Nog. Which is a production he saw.
But I think it makes me into a real ignoramus, so you can't really not be a great fan of Hamilton. I think it's because I basically fundamentally don't love musicals.
Do you not?
No, so I think, I obviously realised it was a musical in advance. But anyway, so we went to see it. But anyway, on the tube on the way back, I'm sitting there on the tube and this guy turns to me and goes, Nick? Nick? So I look at him, Nick Clegg, yeah? And I was like, no, not fucking Nick Clegg. No, I was very polite. I said, no, Ed Miliband, actually. He goes, oh, yeah.
People always say, which I think is true, that you're taller than they expect.
Yes.
And more handsome.
Aww. You say the nicest things.
Do you?
People do say I'm taller than they expect. It's weird.
They do.
Well, I think television must shrink you.
I think also, and we'll get onto this in a minute, but it's that idea of having to be slightly someone you're not as well, to a degree. Do you think, so after you left, you were at school, and I'm getting this impression, you use the word geek and nerd a lot to describe yourself. Yeah.
I was very serious.
Yeah.
Too serious.
Do you think
I mean, I hope my children are sort of, I think I want to bring them up to be less serious.
Yeah.
And all that sort of co-parenting thing is quite an interesting sort of challenge because I think people come from their own background. I think I would say Justine is sort of keener on making sure they, well, maybe she's more assiduous at making sure they do the reading and all that. And I think that's important, but...
It's getting the balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting the balance.
You ended up going to Oxford.
Yes.
Did you know that was going to... Did that feel like a path that was...
No.
But David...
David had gone. And, I mean, you know, my father didn't go to Oxford. He went to the LSE. My mum went to the London School of Economics too. So, you know, it wasn't at all sort of ordained. But I went and visited David. David was 5 years above me in terms of...
Oh, yeah. Academically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, went to visit him. I thought, well, that, you know... Let me apply, see what happens. Yeah, and I had a really good time, but...
I heard you say once...
Yeah.
...that you didn't have a girlfriend throughout
Not
Oxford,
really,
which
no.
Which I thought was so adorable.
Not really. I was sort of very... Well, I was JCR president. So that's like
were.
President of the, you know, student union.
Yeah.
Not student union, because your college.
Yeah.
Here and again, I was quite serious. I think you can sort of tell I feel a little bit... I had a fantastic time at Corpus Christi College where I was.
Yeah.
So I'm not sort of remorseful about it, but I'm sort of... I suppose I'm reflective about it.
Did you do any of that student-y stuff, like...
The Oxford Union? No.
No, I was thinking more...
I didn't do the Oxford
Union. I know.
Union.
Let's Jacob take a cone. Let's steal a cone and take it back to the halls of residence, because that's hilarious, and no one's ever done that
Not
before.
Really. I once ran through some wheat fields, and that was quite an experience. I remember one night, I got drunk like a few times, but very rarely. What else did I do?
And what did you do when you get... How did you...
Oh, I can't even remember.
You can't remember.
I had some tequilas and I got very drunk.
I know you had like two.
Two, yeah. One and a half tequilas. Yeah, so then I...
So it's kind of... You see, I get the sense when you talk like this that It's like when I talk to medics, I suppose, who come from, you're from an academic family.
Yeah.
And it's like doctors, they tend to run in families. So do I always get the sense that was sort of preordained in a sense, you know? Not that there was expectation on you, but just that...
But not to be a politician, there wasn't expectation, really.
Right, so the expectation was that you'd be an academic?
Or maybe an academic, maybe not, but more... You know, my father had sort of been on the margins of the Labour Party on and off.
Yeah.
He'd been a member and then he wasn't. He sort of... Now, which way should we go? I always keep asking you, but...
You know what? I think it might be nice to get some shade for Raymond, Ed.
Okay.
Because it's a bit...
Yeah, let's go. Let's have some shade. Okay, he's getting a bit hot.
He's all right normally, but you know what I carry? Look, we'll give him a little bit of water. Hold that. That's his portable water. Here you go. Look.
Well, you think he's getting a few beads of sweat? He's looking quite enthusiastic about the water. It's got to
be said. Likes the water. There you go, Ray. Have your water. Oh, here are these women that they're talking loudly about a wedding, and I'm quite interested in it.
Really?
Do you like overhearing people's conversations?
Definitely.
Though? Do you? Are you nosy?
Definitely.
Are you?
Yeah.
Would you stay on a tube past your stop to hear the chat?
No, not sure about
that. Far.
I'm not sure about that. Also, if you're a public figure and you do weird things like that, people might think, you know, you're sort of weird.
Imagine being a public figure and doing weird things. The very idea. Oh, look, Ed, he's just lied down. This is just him happy.
Is that a sort of come on?
Do you want to describe what he's done?
Well, he's sort of lying down and sort of... I mean, he'd be basically going for the flat toupee look.
Oh, look at that dog, Ed. He's cute.
What's he doing?
He's just lying down. He's just had a nap.
Is that what happens when he lies down?
Yeah. Come on, Ray.
Oh, gosh, are we overdoing it for him?
No, come on.
I mean, I suppose he is quite small.
Yeah, he is small. Come on, Ray. He's fine. He's enjoying
being a walking toupee is not easy. Like.
Ed's taking pictures of him.
Oh, he's so sweet. I've got to take pictures. Oh, then he'll see. He's quite good on the old selfies, isn't he?
Maybe. Look, we've got
maybe
another.
Maybe more camera savvy than I was as leader.
He does. No, he
knows the camera, doesn't he?
He likes a bacon sarnie.
Does he? Ha ha ha.
Oh, that's become your thing. That what a cheap. Give him that. Give him that treat, Ed. There you go.
Oh,
someone's shouting George.
He rejected it.
Raymond,
I take that personally.
Ed, it's not a bill going through Parliament. He rejected it. I mean, it's a treat.
It was voted down. The treat was voted down. It didn't get a majority. Poor treat. That's unexpected. It's been quashed by the House of Lords.
Do you want to try?
Well, I don't think it went very well the first time. This is like Theresa May and her withdrawal agreement. Let's try again. How many are we going to try? I might have to resign. Right, I'm afraid. Okay, twice. I think.
Well,
Raymond, at least you're playing along.
Was it three times they tried to do it?
Three times. Yeah.
Let's try.
And then I have to resign right after the next one.
Raymond, tell him to sit.
Sit, Raymond.
Now, Ed, you've
got... The toupee, it says no. Right, okay, come on. Right, I'm going to have to resign, Ray. Oh, you date that one. That's good. I don't have to resign. Phew.
Oh, that's... Okay. No, he spat it out at the last minute.
Did he?
Yeah.
Where is it?
Come on, Raymond.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Isn't that the old one? Isn't that the one that he pre... Well, phew, this is not personal.
No, exactly. It's not because of you. Come on, you're being
silly. Hang on, but the other two have disappeared.
I know, but you know what? We'll let other dogs take them, Ed.
No, there's one there.
Okay.
But I think one has been eaten.
But you know what? It's fine, because I'm actually doing all right financially, so I can afford to let those go.
Well, it's more taking it as a personal sort of, you know. Does he like those treats normally?
Well, Ed, I really feel you feel really sad that he hasn't eaten them because you feel it's something to do with you, do you?
Do you think there's something deeply psychological about this? The quest for perfection.
Maybe not.
I think one of the things is that I'm quite self-critical. Well, we've got a lot to be self-critical
about. Do you think you are?
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why is because it's not that my parents were sort of, you know, if you don't get 110%, you failed, but I think... Well, I think high standards can become sort of impossibly high standards.
But I
think you have to be so careful, don't you? It just,
yeah.
You just can sort of impose impossibly high expectations sort of accidentally.
Well, I think that generation, I don't know about your parents, but I always like that observation about how when you have kids, you become the frame. You become the frame and your kids become the picture. That's how it should work. You know, that you recede into the background. Whereas I suppose what I would say is a lot of kids in the 70s, in the sort of background that I had, my parents stayed the picture, really, for me. Oh, look at this. I love this dog. Is this a Newfoundland?
That's not my dog.
Oh, is
it's
it?
Only the three little ones.
Oh, whose dog is this then?
I have no clue.
Is it St Bernard? No?
I think he's a Newfoundland, but I don't know.
He's not rather nice. He's very friendly.
But he doesn't have an owner, eh?
No, I think the owner's there.
Oh, there. Hello. Lovely dog.
That dog's quite obedient at sitting down and getting a treat.
God, you're so rude. I like that you're... is this what you politicians do? You're spinning it into his failure rather than yours.
That's true.
You see?
What kind of dog is it?
Bernese.
Oh, Bernese Mountain Dog.
From Switzerland, yeah.
Oh, Switzerland.
Such a sweet, nice dog.
And I play, how do you say in English?
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek, yeah.
Oh, were you playing hide and seek with the dog?
Instead of calling him all the time.
Yes.
It's a trainer told me, he's my son's dog. He said, hide sometime.
Hide, yeah.
And he's going to look if he, because they don't like to be like alone.
They don't like to be alone. He's ever so cute.
He is cute. Do you think I can stroke him?
7 months?
Only, yeah.
7 months?
7 months.
Hello.
Hello.
He's a puppy.
He's a big boy, isn't he?
He's a big puppy.
What's his name?
Albie.
Hello, Albie.
What's a lovely...
Look at him and Ray Ed.
Yeah, no, that is little and large, isn't it?
Come on. Nice to meet you, Albie.
We need to go home, Albie.
Bye-bye, Albie. See, what do you think about a bigger dog like that?
Oh, I think he's pretty sweet. But I think both of them are sweet in different ways. I think
very
I bet Albie does very big poos. Don't you think? But they're sort of humongous poos.
Well, I always think, when I look at these big dogs...
How big are the poos, Albie?
I like, hello, Albie, shall I give you a treat? Oh, I don't know. There's an etiquette thing about treats.
Yeah, you shouldn't give them...
No, you can't give them...
Right, Albie, I think you need to go with your owner.
You took over there. I like that. You know what? Well, I wanted to mention, actually, when I first saw you... Ed, he really likes you.
Right, OK, he's off.
I remember when I first...
He's a bit overweight.
Can I just say Ed is talking about the dog, not the owner? Yeah. He wasn't body-shaming the Swiss man. He's very slim.
I mean, don't you think he's a little bit high BMI?
He's got junk in the trunk. To be fair... He's a Burmese mountain dog.
You think he's just a big unit?
I think he's just a big unit.
Yeah, okay, maybe.
He's just well built. He's a bit two tickets to the gun show.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And look, if you compare him with Ray...
Well, Ray certainly isn't overweight.
It's like comparing Zola Budd with one of the world's strongest men. So I was going to say, when I first met you, Ed, I was at our... In fact, we're going to talk about him, but Jeff Lloyd, who's our mutual friend...
Yes.
..who you do the Reasons to be Cheerful podcast with, which is brilliant, and I love it... he invited me to his wife Sarah's birthday.
Yes.
And I walked in with two friends of mine, and the first person I saw was you. And I was with my friends, and we said, oh, it's lovely. Oh, I can't hear you, though. There was one of those scenes where the music was loud.
It was far too loud.
But you... There was something really interesting, because we were talking about how the music was loud. And very quietly, but very decisively, you said, oh, let me go and turn that down. And you walked over to the decks and you just got behind the decks, which was great because I noticed people walking into the party seeing Ed Miliband DJing, or so they thought. And you just turned
And I caused a massive power outage and all the lights went out and disaster struck.
You just turned it down and came over. And what fascinated me about that is that that separated you from everyone else, I think. I think that's what...
I think it's because I'd said to Jeff in advance, I really hope the music isn't going to be too loud. I mean, which does make me sound sort of relatively elderly.
But we can all say that.
Right.
But that's the difference, I think, between someone who, it's what Frank Skinner, who I work with, calls the difference between doing to the world and letting the world do to you. So in that act, I think that was what, that's what I realised you were a politician, because I thought, right, you got up and did something about it, and
well,
you weren't frightened. It was such a small act, but we were all sitting around passively.
Well, that's interesting.
Like, it seemed, you talk about being geekish, and you talk about, but you strike everyone and me as quite self-effacing and quite humble in some ways, but then that was quite a bold gesture, I think. That was a confident gesture.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it like that. Maybe it's because I felt comfortable with Jeff and Sarah and I knew I wasn't going to offend them. I think I grew up, I mean, it's actually the opposite, this is slightly going to be the opposite to the, what we just,
yeah,
you just said, but my dad used to have quite strong political arguments with people.
Yeah.
And he sort of wouldn't suffer fools gladly. And I don't really like conflict very much, which is unfortunate for somebody in politics. Yeah.
You picked the wrong job.
I know, I did pick the wrong job.
Did you, would you get embarrassed when he would do, when he would,
yeah,
I would as well.
Yeah.
But that's why I think you did the music, because you could sense that we were saying
right,
what was too
I
loud.
See.
You felt, well, I'm the person that knows Jeff and Sarah well enough, I can go and they won't mind if I turn it down a bit. So you were sort of problem solving.
Maybe that's true.
You didn't do it in an entitled Bullingdon way. You just, I think
hopefully
it was
not.
Just... I need to talk about when you got into politics.
Yes.
Because as you said, I know you'd interned for Tony Benn, is that right?
At the age of 16, yeah.
Oh, wow, was that an incredible experience?
It was an incredible experience.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't really when internships really existed. I just went and did some work experience with him for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And he paid me 25 quid a week, because he said that was a level you get on the YTS. He was incredibly nice. And, you know, I think I was just opening his post. So it must have been 1986.
Right.
I mean, he was genuinely, well, you know, egalitarian in the sense that he would treat you like an, you know, treat you like an equal and sort of, yeah, it was a sort of fantastic experience.
Well, should we go back on ourselves, Ed? I'm not sure where we are now. We've got,
I think
we've
we can
so
go.
Far.
I've got an absolutely terrible sense of direction, just
I know.
So you know.
We should go this way.
Yeah. I think that's what I was going to say.
Shall I carry you for a bit? Come on, Ray.
I mean, that's a good, you couldn't do that with the old,
no,
whatever his name was.
The Burmese sheepdog,
yeah.
Albie.
Albie.
Yeah, go on. So,
I think in a way, I remember having this conversation with my dad when I must have been, he died when I was 24, so
yeah.
22, 23.
Yeah.
And I said to him, look, you know, I have thought about going and being academic, but I think that's not really what motivates me. What motivates me is politics. And he said, look, I sort of know that.
Yeah.
I really remember quite vividly having the conversation with him and it sort of being all right, you know.
And did he live, because I know your dad died when you were...
24, yeah.
24, and that's quite young.
Yeah, it is. And it's pretty sad. And also, he had a heart attack when I was 3. I don't really obviously remember it.
Yeah.
And he was quite serious heart attack. And I think he felt he was living on borrowed time, which is why he could be quite irascible and...
Oh.
You know what I mean? If you...
Of course.
If you feel that...
That must have been so tough, though, Ed.
Yeah, I know.
How did you find out? Did you did?
No, it was a gradual decline. He had a heart bypass in 1991, and normally
right.
heart bypasses, at least today, are pretty straightforward. And this wasn't straightforward at all. He was in intensive care for 4 weeks. It really sort of, you know, it was really tricky. He was touch and go whether he would make it.
Yeah.
And then he did, but He was not quite back. He was never really quite back to where he had been.
Where he'd been.
And then he sort of gradually got worse. Three years later, he sort of just gradually declined. And there were the weeks when he was in hospital and getting worse.
You
know
that?
What it is? Sometimes you're, well, I don't need to tell you about this, but
no.
You get in a sort of vortex of, you're in a hospital and it's like, oh, it's not that serious. And then
I
it
know.
Sort of is slightly more serious and then it's slightly more serious.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're all like,
Yeah.
You know.
No, you can see, it's the faces. I know this is awful, but I used to think when they were really nice to me, I'd think, oh God, here we go.
Right.
It was like they'd sort of greet you. If you'd go in the morning and they'd greet you like you were a member of the royal family opening a
right.
wing, I'd sit and they're all lined up respectfully.
Right.
I'd think, oh, okay. You know. Yeah. But Did you get the call then? Because the call is horrible.
It wasn't so much that.
You didn't get
more,
like...
I remember my brother ringing me up 2 days before he died and saying, yeah, that things aren't good. You know, yeah. You need to come.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got MRSA and this and that and the other. And, you know, it was all one of those things where... And I think afterwards, I remember going to see the doctor trying to understand what had happened, because they kept saying all the way through,
yeah,
no, it's all right, he's going to be all right, he's going to be all right, he's going to be all right. And then it was suddenly, well, he's not going to be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You must have been devastated, though.
Yeah, I was. I mean...
Were you with Justine at that point?
No, I wasn't, no. I don't know how you kind of... I think there's some sense in which when you're... At least for me, when he died, I think I was sort of thinking I need to be there for my mum more than anything.
Yeah.
And so maybe... Yeah, I don't know.
Yes, I can see that. I think that's true, because I did that when my sister died. Maybe that's got to do with our childhoods a bit.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I know,
adulting thing. I felt I need to sort of rise to this a bit.
Yeah, maybe there is an element of that.
Yeah.
Maybe there is an element of that.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a pattern of that in my life, which is, like, I was desperate to get a first at university, and I got myself into quite a lather about it.
Did you? And
I didn't get a first. And then I didn't, wasn't really, it was very strange. I sort of just then was like, okay, well, never mind.
Right.
My dad was like, well, he kind of wondered, you know, I'd spent 6 months sort of in mega angst. And then he thought, oh, you're going to be devastated. And I was like, well, it's just one of those things, isn't it? And I sort of moved on.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some sense in which that was what was expected.
Yes,
that you sort of, once something happens, you just have to sort of cope. God, I don't know. It's good that Raymond's not sort of... There's a bit of a stramash going on here, isn't there? Do you think they're related, those two dogs? They look very similar.
They look similar, don't they? But... Yeah, he looks like... I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of that.
You wouldn't want Raymond to be in the middle of that, would you?
I think we need to head that way, Ed.
I'm admiring your decisive leadership here, Emily. No, I'm serious.
Look,
you are.
Look where I've led us.
You've led us into a sort of bush.
This is what's good. I'm not in charge. So then, I wonder if... Do you think after your dad died... Because your rise up through the ranks of the Labour Party was pretty swift.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say? I mean, it was almost like within a five-year period.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be an MP. I mean, I never thought, but I wasn't sort of thinking I've got to be an MP. I became an advisor, worked for Harriet Harman, worked for Gordon Brown, took some time off, went to Harvard, then came back. And I thought, well...
I love that in your time off, you went to Harvard.
Well, I thought I can't, rather than sort of... You know, sort of taking drugs in Ibiza or something.
I didn't go to Iron Appa,
Exactly. I've kept the Iron Appa period under wraps, actually.
Imagine you and Iron Appa.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yes, so anyway, so the movement, your rise through the Labour Party was just swift. It feels like you must have been sort of singled out as this talent and star of the future. And
I think these things are very, what was it, Michael Heseltine? Somebody said time and chance. It wasn't Michael Heseltine. Somebody said, you know, it's just very much sort of these things happen or don't happen, you know, and it's just, it's all the way the cards fall. We're talking during the Tory leadership contest.
Oh, you were good.
Yeah, well, that's nice of you to say, but I mean, you know, I don't know. I think these things are very... I think there's a lot of luck.
So you weren't... You must have felt when you were working, ultimately, you know, for Gordon Brown, yeah. and you were right in the seat of yeah. power. Did you feel... That must have been quite sort of electric almost. You must have felt excited, or did it just feel like a job, you know? Did it?
No, it didn't feel like a job, but it definitely took over my life, you know, right. in a sort of... you know, Jeff Lloyd always says to me, Gordon Brown ate your 90s, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I don't know anything about popular culture in the 90s. I mean, I'm not sure I would have known about popular culture even if Gordon Brown hadn't eaten my 90s.
Did you know what Nebworth was?
Is that a stately home?
So cute. That was when Oasis...
Oh, yes.
...played, and it is
I've
a
heard
stately
of them.
Home. Have you heard of Oasis?
Yes, I have.
Did you know that? Do you know that Blur and Oasis is
yes.
a rivalry?
Yes, I did know that.
Okay. I like it. It's like speaking to someone who's in a coma.
Yes, exactly.
I don't believe that though. I think you play that up, that geek thing a bit. I think you probably were listening to music and going out and.
I don't know.
I don't think you're as square as you pretend.
Really? you found my secret. You know, Doncaster is my constituency.
Yeah, your son actually corrected me and said Doncaster North.
Yes.
Which I loved.
I don't come from there.
Yeah.
I went, you know, the CEO, my predecessor, unfortunately got very ill.
Yes.
He stood down right at the last minute. It was a very open thing. There were people from Doncaster going for it. And I sort of went up there thinking, I don't really know anyone here. And the first conversation I had was with somebody who said to me, well, I don't know why you're ringing me, mate. I want a local person, and then I kept him on the phone an hour later. We were still talking, and you know, it really, I really got the bug for being an MP. I wasn't really sure what I was going to think going up there, and I really got the bug for being an MP. And actually, when I lost in 2015, well, I basically, I didn't really think I want to give it all up of being an MP. I didn't think, well, now I want to just go off and do something else. I thought I need to sort
this
I
is want, after the election.
Yeah, I want to stick with it.
Yeah.
I suppose there's a couple of reasons. One is I think it's a kind of, you can still contribute ideas even if you're not the leader.
Yeah.
And secondly, I sort of really do care about the constituency I represent, and I kind of felt they've given me a lot by supporting me when I was leader, and I can't just bugger off now.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, losing the election, that was bad too, just while we're on bad things. Not recommended for your listeners who are thinking of running a political party. Rory Stewart or Boris Johnson or anyone is listening. It's better to win than to lose.
Yeah, but...
On the other hand, David Cameron won and, you know, he's gone down in history and not the best way, so you know.
But that took, you know, when I think about you getting up and turning the music down, to me,
yes,
I relate that oddly to your decision to stand.
Oh, that's interesting.
As leader, which is there's
yes,
the quiet determination.
That's very perceptive.
I'm just going to get on and do this quietly.
That's very perceptive.
There's no fuss about it. You just went and did it.
Yeah, that's very perceptive.
Oh,
you should be in the. You should do this professionally, like a therapist.
But you know, there was no noise and fury, and I'm doing this big thing. You just got on and quietly did it.
Yeah, I think that is sort of true. And I kind of thought. I think I look. It was incredibly difficult to stand against my brother, or to fight a contest against my brother. But I felt I had something distinctive to contribute about my view about where the Labour Party needed to go.
Do you think in a way that the press made too much of that? Because I think, well, you know, Venus and Serena Williams, they play against each other. Loads of footballers do that. It's...
I think different.
You're in the same job and you ended up standing in the same... I don't know. I think there was a bit of
drama over that.
Almost.
I mean, honestly, I think people have such different reactions to it. I think sometimes it's to do with people's place as a sibling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, their other experiences, what they think about politics. You know, it's just such a very, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And it's, and I know you and David, you've sort of, you know, it's time, isn't it? It takes to sort of sort those things out. But that, did you feel it was that thing of excitement in a sense and shock? Were you shocked when you won the leadership?
Well, actually,
did you remember standing on thinking, what the hell?
Here's the funny thing about it. I mean, I was just absolutely convinced I was going to win. I mean, more convinced than I had justification for, as it turned out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I would basically thought I was going to win. I didn't think
did
I
you?
Was. Yeah, and I didn't.
But were the odds against you at the time?
Well, the odds were when I began. No, I didn't necessarily think I would win when I began.
Right.
But I think by the end, I thought I was going to win. Now, I had obviously had no way of knowing that because I won very narrowly. So,
why do you think that is?
I don't know, really. I just, maybe you kind of.
Self-belief?
Yeah, well, maybe you sort of end up having to sort of own it and you know.
Is it David Beckham taking a free kick against Greece? You know,
I think comparing myself to David Beckham.
No, but do you know what I mean? They talk about footballers, and so when certain footballers go up to take a penalty,
well, I think there's definitely a truth.
There's no sense of isn't going to make it in.
You have to get into the mindset. I mean, certainly this was true as leader. You have to get into the mindset where. Well, it's what Justine always says, you have your armour on or your shell.
Oh, that's a good way of
putting it, and then you sort of... I think we're going the right way, by the way. Well done.
I hope we are.
You've got a very good instinctive sense of direction, obviously. I mean, it's odd, actually, thinking back on it all.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I quite stood it, really.
Really?
Yeah, kind of. Because it is incredibly hard, and it was incredibly hard for Justine. And, you know, we had two young children, and it was... I mean, it was really, you know, cameras outside the house, lots of abuse, lots of sort of, I don't mean abuse, but lots of sort of vilification in the
it
media
is abuse,
and elsewhere.
Ed, actually. It
well,
is abuse.
Well, abuse in a way.
There's personal comments, it is abuse, I think. But it's
I'm quite reflective, by the way, on Rory Stewart, because I don't know, we don't know what's going to happen to him, but I think one of the things he's handling quite well is when people say, don't you look weird? He's like, yes, I do. I'm a cross between whatever he said. And I think that's a really smart, and in a way I wish I'd done that a bit more.
Well, I think when you were elected leader, and when I felt during the election campaign, it was interesting because I was shocked, quite honestly, at the way people spoke to you sometimes, you know, just...
What, mean media people?
Well, yeah, just questions people asked, and when people comment on someone's appearance, I think it's so strange. I don't sort of get what that has. And I got the sense that you're very, everyone who meets you, and this is the impression I've had of you, and obviously from listening to your podcast with Jeff, everyone who listens to that will realise that. But you're very warm and self-effacing and funny. And you never got a chance to show
well,
that
that's
properly.
In a way I should, I mean, I have to take my own responsibility
except when
for
Jeff
that.
Interviewed you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and there are sort of those moments, and but you know, I look. Obviously, if you know now what you, if you knew then what you know now, you do it differently. But I think there was a sort of, I think I was also in a transition period between a sort of 1990s politics, which was incredibly controlled,
a sort of New Labour.
And a sort of 2000.
Look like you're the area manager at M&S.
Exactly, and then a 2000 and sort of. 1920 politics, which is much more loose.
Look like Michael Foot's grandson.
Yeah, he doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. Doesn't sort of matter.
Yeah. I remember watching you being interviewed actually by Jeremy Paxman, and I think he's great, but I do think he's quite old school.
Oh, this is on the election campaign.
Yeah, and it was on some thing. He was chatting, and he said, "Are you tough enough?" In that very pugnacious way, which interestingly. I actually think viewers, even in the last 4 years, I think the culture's changed. I think people would say, we don't want to know about him being tough, we want to know if he's compassionate, actually. And that very old school, you know, you'll hear Piers Morgan on Question Time talking about Trump saying, he's great at deals, he gets killer lawyers in there. I think that's sort of quite 80s, that
well,
idea.
Well, I did
politics,
have in my mind this idea of that you needed a different model for political leadership.
Oh, wait, what's this?
I don't know, it's like a treasure hunt.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to find these control things. They're these wooden things with like a number and a letter.
Oh, really?
I'm happy to see them. in this area.
Oh, we'll have a look for them.
We'll shout if we
see
one.
Yeah, we'll shout if we see one.
There's no competition.
Oh, okay.
So tell us, don't tell them.
Okay. Oh, we will. He'll be in the cabinet. I was just saying with the Jeremy Paxson interview you did, I looked at it
and I have seen it quite recently. Yeah.
He says, are you tough enough? And you gave a very credible answer, actually, about how, you know, Barack Obama had been on the phone and they'd be talking about bombing Syria, and you'd sort of stood alone and stood up to him. But there was a part of me thinking, I wish you could have said, like when Rory Stewart was asked about his weaknesses, I think it wasn't the right climate, that you could have been honest and said, well, I think there are more important qualities. Of course I'm tough. I have to be to work in politics.
I think that's a really good perceptive point, actually. I think I did sort of think at various moments, you know, we should to develop the idea of a different model of political leadership. But
should we go right or left, Ed?
I think probably left.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
a different model of political leadership, but I found it was quite hard to articulate, and because basically people have this sort of halcyon view in an odd way of Thatcher. I don't mean everybody has a halcyon view of her, but there is a sort of sense in the zeitgeist that you need that established. Or Blair,
we didn't in
I suppose.
Our house. My dad cried when she got in.
No, but do you know what I mean? I don't mean a halcyon view.
No, I know. Yeah. It's an idea of what a leader is like. Yeah.
And in a way, I think Trump is, you know, part of that. But I wonder whether it's also shaped by the sort of climate that now people are thinking, well, do we really want somebody who just sort of bangs the table and doesn't get anywhere, but just looks tough but doesn't deliver?
And when you see the leader debate recently, when I saw Rory Stewart, I don't know, he feels like a right-wing version of you. Well, he's actually more centrist than far-right, isn't he?
At least he's talking about leadership in a different way. See, I remember doing this thing about empathy, because I got really interested in empathy as the missing ingredient in political leadership. And then, you know, I think I was going through a bad time, but I talked to this guy, Simon Baron Cohen, who's writes about empathy and da, 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 and then, you know, it got written up as Ed Consults a Shrink type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sort of, you know, I don't know. It's hard. Look, you know, that being a political leader, I think particularly on the left in this country, is operating in a political war zone. You know, it really is. People often say to me on Twitter, oh, where was this sassy Ed in 2015? And I think to myself, well, I think you're right. They're right in a way. But on the other hand, you know, if you say something, you know, you, particularly then, it's changing a bit now.
But, you know, I watched something which made me quite sad, which was you in some leadership debate on Sky, you know. A woman in the audience was asking about the referendum, and it was like you were like Nostradamus, essentially.
Oh, I haven't ever looked back at her.
Well, I suggest you do, because a woman asks about the referendum in the audience and says, should we, you know, why should it be you deciding? Because you've made it clear that you don't think we should have one. And you said...
You've certainly done your research, Emily.
I'm
impressed. Much more research than Jeff and I do. Anyway... I tell you, your father brought you up to do, you know.
My father was
do
called,
the work. Do the work.
Well, my father was called. I'm getting very passionate about politics as I get older. Weirdly, this clip I saw, which I'm going to put on Twitter, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it really kind of broke my heart.
So I get asked.
You essentially get asked.
This is like a revelation to me, because this is like the sort of guy who goes into the coma. I don't remember. Well, I don't remember any of
this
it, really.
This woman says...
I remember the worst bits. That's
this woman...
Problem.
Well, I'm going to remember... Well, of course, we all remember the worst reviews. But this woman says we should have a referendum. People. And you say, why should you get to decide? We, the people, should decide.
Yeah.
And you say, well, I respect that opinion, but I don't agree with it. I'm obviously paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
But you essentially say, I believe you have spoken to people by choosing to elect me or the government you elect. That is your...
That's interesting.
Which I thought was a great way of dealing with it. And you said, but you're entrusting me to make that decision on your behalf.
Mm.
I feel that having a referendum would be disruptive and chaotic, essentially. And you also say it would waste time and distract from more important issues.
Well, I do remember thinking that. Oh. I mean, that was basically what I thought.
You said we should not have a referendum. It will end in disaster. I was almost, I couldn't believe it.
God.
It's extraordinary.
Nostradamus me.
But does that make you feel, hearing about that, and remembering that that was very much your opinion?
Nostrum illibandus, yeah.
Do you feel a sense of, oh, I was right, or do you just feel frustration? Or I feel very frustrated on your behalf.
We go straight on. What do I feel about it? I do feel incredibly frustrated, but I think my protection mechanism is not to think about it, because I think I find it, it's a bit like sort of grief. I think it's to sort of, I think I sort of dealt with it, I kind of felt really miserable for the first year or so, maybe 18 months after I lost. But then the way of sort of dealing with it is to not, because if I spent my time thinking to myself, if this, that, you know what I mean?
It's true.
Then I mean, I feel incredibly angry that the whole of politics has been like eaten by the Brexit, eaten and poisoned, if you can be eaten and poisoned at the same time, or poisoned and eaten by Brexit. So yes, I do feel that.
Did you feel that year afterwards, though? I think I would have just gone into depression or something. Did you?
Don't really know what the sort of, you know, I don't know quite whether it was clinic, you know, I'm not sure what the, I was just very sad.
Yeah.
I was just sad, and.
That's probably a 70s way of describing depression.
Although, you know, maybe oddly enough it takes time to sink in as well.
Yes.
Maybe the first few months weren't the worst, oddly enough. I remember
it's
meeting
like a bereavement, isn't it?
Well, I remember meeting this guy on the plane who's actually now one of my colleagues. We went to Australia in July, August to get away from it, or August actually, to 2015. And I remember getting on the plane and this guy saying to me, he's a nice little friend of mine, he said, he just happened to be on the same plane for some reason, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And he said to me, oh, you know, it's absolutely shit for you at the moment, isn't it? And I remember thinking to myself, I suppose it is really. You know how it's funny, it's sort of rather obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose I kind of went into it. The reason I mentioned the first and the, or not getting the first and my dad dying and all that, is I suppose there's some part of my defense mechanism which was about, you just cope with these things. These things happen.
Yeah.
I'm much more likely to worry about them in advance than I am to... Then the answer is, well, if it happens, you've just got to cope with it.
Yes, I see what you mean, yeah. You get on and you... But then Alistair Campbell, he talks about his... He's talked about, you know, he obviously had depression and he's had... But did you ever feel that?
I don't... Sort of not, like not being able to get out of bed or...
No,
I didn't really...
You just felt low.
Yeah, I just felt low.
It was it was circumstantial.
Yes,
it was depression, which is a reaction to an event.
I just felt low and unhappy, but.
And I almost think as well, it's that thing of.
I did think I've got to keep going. I didn't sort of think I can't face seeing people or I can't face.
Yeah.
I'm not just blowing my own trumpet here, but
no.
I was quite resilient about it.
Right.
You know, I just carried on and found other things to do.
But your skin is thicker than most mortal. It has to be. For some of the stuff, you know, I look at those political programs when they're chatting to you, and I even saw David on something recently, and it was a perfectly nice ITV interviewer, but I thought, leave him alone. I just feel exhausted.
Although, oddly enough, you know, I find it, this is why I said I kind of look back on it and think, how did I put up with it? I find the sort of, there's something about being out the front line that you kind of get to, you think, I'm not sure I really want to go back into it, you know. You know, it's like, oh.
So you don't feel now, as a backbencher, you don't feel, oh, I'm on the bench and someone else is wearing a number 10 shirt.
I feel that a bit.
Number 10 shirt.
I feel
both ways.
I do feel that a bit.
Do you?
Yeah, I feel quite conflicted about it. So at some level I feel that, and I feel I'm on the sort of periphery, and at another level I feel a great sense of I'm glad I'm not in that.
Do you?
It's quite paradoxical, yeah. What I feel.
Do you feel?
So I do, you know, I like wouldn't leap at the chance of like going back in, and you know, I feel quite anxious about that.
Well, Prime Minister's questions as well. I mean, you always famously said, yeah, you didn't like that. It wasn't.
No.
Why would you?
Oh, it's just ghastly.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Jeff and,
yes,
Lloyd, who's your great,
yes,
friend and our,
yes,
mutual,
he is,
friend.
My late in life friend.
I know. And did you meet on that Absolute Radio,
yes,
interview?
Yes.
During the election campaign?
Yes.
And why did you guys decide to do the podcast together, which we should say is called Reasons to Be Cheerful? It's absolutely brilliant.
Oh,
it's very...
Nice.
I think it's
ideas to make the world a better place, and there are,
well,
lots
I think
of
it's good as well, because I think you're all good at talking about politics in a relatable way. It's kind of accessible, and it's... But it feels like it's your version of a think tank, essentially.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it, I think. So it was Jeff's idea. I mean, he deserves the credit for this. You know, I was thinking, oh, should I set up a think tank? Should I do this? Should I do that? And you know, it was quite hard to know what to do after the election. Mm. Well, this was sort of 18 months, nearly 2 years, actually. And I got an email.
Were you getting offers, by the way, Ed? Were you getting, will you go on I'm a Celebrity?
The offers I've had, Emily. If only I could tell you. You know, no. Yeah, I've got. I've had a lot.
What was
the
weird? I bet. Did you get Strictly Come Dancing?
There was a car. There's driving a car program, learning to drive like a sports car. I don't know, sort of type program or rally car program. There was. I've had two different offers about like buffing up, and then you reveal your buffed up sort of bod in front of a live studio audience. I don't know whether those programs have ever been made or are being made. Strictly a couple of times.
I bet there were lots where they basically tried to crowbar your surname somehow into it. So it'd be something to do with
on
the
ice,
band.
Dancing,
you know,
on
they'd
ice.
Try and, yeah, dancing on ice.
I mean, God, me dancing on ice, it would be like a sort of giraffe trying to sort of dance on ice.
I can't believe they offered you that. I mean, you're an academic, like, as if you're going to do dots.
What, it should be sort of marks on ice or something. Yeah.
So you were given these weird offers, and then you thought, no, I'm going to
do...
Well,
I think for most of them, I basically turned down them all.
Yeah.
And apart from the last leg. I mean, have I got news for you?
The last leg was great.
I just did one thing, and I just... they're quite nice, and I did it, and, you know... but I've generally sort of not wanted to do that stuff. Not because it's a bad thing to do, just because it wasn't sort of my thing.
Yeah. Well, you're still an MP.
You're still an MP.
You know,
and you certainly
that.
Can't go off and do, I just don't think you can go off for weeks on end and do Strictly Come Dancing. I've never been offered The Jungle, but I was offered The Jungle after show. That's how B-list I am.
The Jungle after show? What, so you'd be on the panel?
Yeah.
Talking about people about
eating rats'
testicles. Collins is performing.
Yeah.
But it's so weird, that idea, and it is the Trump thing, that people just mix in politics with. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's the same job.
I think it says something about politics, though, this, because it's like one of the other things that people say when they meet me, apart from you're taller than I expect, is sometimes they say, where's your bodyguards? Or
really?
Where's your security? Or I wouldn't expect to see you on the tube.
Really?
Or, oh, you're in standard class on the train. I mean, often there is that.
Yeah,
but that's because politicians seem like a sort of remote bunch of people from the planet, sort of, you know, goodness knows where.
Well, there is a sort of ministerial, you know, when you're in the cabinet,
sure.
Different, isn't it? But you're right. So you were given all these offers, and then Jeff
said, look, people are feeling really depressed about the world.
Yeah.
There must be good ideas out there.
Yeah.
Would you be my sort of partner in taking people through them? And
he had a real man crush on you.
And I think he was very insightful. And I was quite sort of thinking, oh, what's this going to be like? And then the general election of 2017 happened, so it sort of got delayed.
Yeah.
And then we sort of launched it. And I said, well, let's just do a pilot and see how it goes. Because, you know, I was thinking, William Hague said this thing to me after the election. He said, there's got three pieces of advice. One is, what were they? Well, anyway, one piece of advice, I can't remember what they were, but the one most important thing was, make sure the next thing you do is successful.
Really?
Well, I mean, in other words, don't do something which is a sort of great flop. He also said to me, you'll carry on being the same person you are, and people say, my, isn't he different?
Really?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's
and
happened.
And that's exactly what's happened. And he said it to me really early on. It was really interesting.
Well, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And once you take the crown off, you know, we all know there's a certain... Plus, I would say my own impression of you is that you're quite authentic. And I personally think that damaged people probably... I think it's a sign of emotional damage in a way to say, right, I'm going to go onto a world stage and just spill out everything about myself and not have any sort of armour protecting me and my family.
Well,
and you decided to do what I think was an emotionally healthy thing, which was there was a... I think you necessarily have to have something that you hang up at the end of the day, you know, to keep things real, because that's a public job.
Yeah. I tried not to do my memoirs or anything as well. I just
would
thought,
you never do that?
Oh, I don't know, maybe like in 20 years' time, but I just sort of think... I just didn't... And also a kind of self-justificatory account of why, you know, I was right about everything. I just sort of thought I'm gaunt.
So, Jeff and your relationship is lovely, and it is, yeah, like I said, it's a bromance. It feels like you have such a great rapport together, and your mates as well in real life,
definitely.
Aren't you?
But I mean, we became mates because of the podcast, and in fact, he sent me a nice picture this morning with one sleeve rolled up and one sleeve not rolled up, which unconsciously I've done.
What is this sleeve thing that you do?
He says, I'm doing the Ed with a one sleeve rolled up and one sleeve not rolled up.
Is he one of your best male friends now?
Definitely.
Do you ever, Ed, when you're... and I want to say, actually, everyone should listen to Reasons to be Cheerful because it's really opened my eyes about lots of things, you know, and it's accessible, but it's funny as well. And you're sort of hilarious on it as well. And
I feel super comfortable there. It's interesting.
Yeah, you sound it. You sound really comfortable. But I think you're likeable. I think your media persona is very... It's not a media persona. It's who you are. But free from those shackles, your soul can sing openly.
Yeah.
To paraphrase Earl Spencer. Come here, please. Raymond. Oh, Ed, I really loved our walk. I know you've got... So what is your day today?
I don't know. I'm about to go into my office.
And what's the... And there's the office in...
Portcullis House in Westminster.
What an office. I mean, that's so posh, isn't it?
Well, kind of. I was hoping for something posher.
Do you know what? I think it's probably made you happier.
Possibly. Mm.
That's like something an old friend of your mum's says, but
I'm not sure.
No, Ed, I think...
I think I'd prefer to win at the election if it's all the same to you. Beryl.
Okay. I think your kids will be less... There'll be less pressures on your kids.
I think that's definitely true. I think that's definitely true. And, you know, Justine and I never really... We'd sort of vaguely talk about what would it mean to move into Downing Street, but we were slightly in denial about it because it would have been...
Also, Justine,
a teacher told Daniel that when he was quite young, so he must have only been five or six, you know, that he would have to, that he would have to move house.
Did he? Yeah. What did Daniel say? Was he a bit short?
I don't know. I think he didn't quite know.
I personally also think for Justine, you know, I loved it when I met your kids because they said...
She wouldn't have become a High Court judge if I'd won the election.
Well, do you know what they said, which I love? When I asked Dan and Sam, I said, what do you... asked about the parents, and I said, have you got a dog? And they said, no. And I said, oh, why not? And they said, well, my mother's a High Court judge and my father's an MP for Doncaster North. So it's very difficult because we're very busy. And what I loved is that, firstly, it was such a brilliant answer. But also what I loved is that Justine came first.
Yes, that's a good point.
That was important to me.
That's a really interesting point.
I hope you take that in the right way.
No. It's good, actually.
And I'm not sure she would have if...
I think it would have been very hard to become the High Court judge if you're the wife of the Prime Minister, isn't it? I mean, that would have been...
I think she would have been wrestled into Bowdoin cardigans. They would have made her wear Daily Mail-friendly dresses and... I think she's an impressive, interesting woman in her own right, and I would have felt upset about that.
Really, that's really fair enough. That's really...
Ed, you always go, great point, really fair. Like, you're very... You're always sort of... I noticed that when I chat to you. You're not contradictory. You encourage people when you talk to them.
I think there's something about politics that can turn people into sort of... I don't quite know what the right word is, but sort of...
Arseholes.
No, I think maybe that too, but I think it's more... You get a sort of inflated sense of your own importance. I'm sure I have it too, but, you know, just...
What would people...
I think the ability to keep learning
yes.
and keep listening and have some humility is quite difficult. And I think it's really important, actually.
What do you most worry that people say about you when you leave a room? I asked Matt Ford that, who did this podcast. You know Matt?
And yeah.
I said, what do you worry people will say? Oh, the thing about Matt, he's too... And he said, much? What do you think... What do you worry when you... leave a room that people might say the thing about Ed?
I don't think I worry about what people say about me when I leave the room, actually. Funnily enough, do I?
That's why you were leader, probably.
Do I worry about what people say about me?
No, that's a fair enough answer.
I think the only thing I'd worry about is not what I would say about me.
Mm.
But I would worry about whether I've said something that accidentally offends them. So, for example, I'll say to Lindsay afterwards, look, I said this thing to Emily about her dog being like a toupee. Do you think that's a bad thing? Or I'll say
Lindsay's
to Jeff.
Lindsay's your...
who worked with me in Parliament, in Parliament and my chief staff
well,
in Parliament.
Well, you said to Jeff as well.
And I'll probably say to Jeff, do you think that's all right? You know, will you check with Emily that I haven't offended her? Because, you know... So I think I wouldn't tend to worry about what people say about me, but I worry about... You know, was I nice enough to that person?
Yeah,
did I?
Yeah.
That's because I think I have in my mind a sort of some of the fractious elements of yeah. my childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've got to be the smoother over.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an entirely good characteristic to have, by the way.
Don't you? Have that as well.
I think it's hard in an organisation to be the person that always wants to smooth things over.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
you absorb everyone else's feelings a lot of the time.
Slightly,
and that can
yes.
be exhausting. Ed, I've loved our chat, honestly.
I've loved it too.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How do you feel about dogs since you've had the walk with Raymond? Because I know your boys...
Raymond is looking so sweet. Raymond is looking like, please adopt another one like me.
Do you think you and Justine and the boys would ever consider it?
Maybe we should do some Raymond dog sitting as a trial.
Yes. Ed, I've loved it. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Am I allowed to hug you?
Definitely.
Will you dog sit Raymond?
Definitely.
Will you promise not to say he looks like a toothache again?
I'm sorry if I offended you.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.